Thank you, Howard, who, just for the record, is not simply a volunteer. Thank you, Howard, our board president, and all of our lay leaders, and all of you for being here this evening. Several years ago, we had a conversation among a group of Kol alumni, stakeholders, community members, and we were talking about what does the Kol do and how do we reflect on it and how do we enhance it. So we had many meetings over the course of several months, and at the conclusion of those meetings, after we reviewed literally every hour of the Kol and the Limud and the programming and the adults and the kids, so someone raised the question that we need to really articulate what it is that the Kol does. What is the goal of the Kol? And that will help set the stage for tonight's conversation. It became clear that the function of the Kol is to facilitate and nurture spiritual growth in the Chicagoland Jewish community. And that phrase may capture the word in Hebrew, which is chinuch. The word chinuch in Hebrew, coarsely translated into English as education, really evokes those ideas and ideals. As the holy Piasatzner Rebbe of Klonimus Kalman Shapira, Zecher Tzadok V'Kadosh Levracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, describes, chinuch is a lashon of Knisas ha'adam o kli lo'umnus shu asid lamumba. It's an inauguration. So how do you inaugurate something? By facilitating it, by nurturing it, by enabling it. And that's really the function of our kol that has guided us. And so tonight, we have a great zechus, a great merit. And that is to welcome for a conversation about chinuch, a personal conversation, to extraordinary mechanchim, educators in their own rights, and I'm not going to take airtime to review the full professional CVs of either of tonight's distinguished guests. Harav Rosenzweig Shalita is a Rosh Yeshiva, senior Rosh Yeshiva, and Rosh Kolel at Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan at YU, with Talmidim over now decades that span literally states, countries, and continents. And Professor Rosenzweig, with her Talmidos in Stern College as a professor of Tanakh, also leading and guiding and inspiring. But tonight we're going to focus not so much on their professional credentials, but also really on a personal side, because the two extraordinary individuals to whom you spend this evening with, they are actually the children of renowned Mechanchim and Mechanchos, educators, both Rev Rosenzweig and Professor Rosenzweig's parents. All four of them were devoted educators. And they themselves are Mechanchim of their own children, Bli Ayin Hara, and grandchildren, children-in-law. And so tonight, we invite all of you to open your ears and open your hearts to a personal conversation, to think about and reflect together on the ideas and the ideals of chinuch, of education. So maybe one way to start is to ask Rav Rosenzweig and the Rebbetzin to talk about, to reflect on a way that your parents uniquely raised you, how they were mechanech you. And for those who are becoming familiar with our community, you know, Rav Rosenzweig's parents were legendary in the world, not just of chinuch, but also in Rabbanus over the past couple of years. Now that we've introduced more Zoom shiurim, so Rav Rosenzweig, there is a seat in his study with books in one side, and then there is a terrific picture, a legit terrific picture of his father, Zichrono Livracha, on the other side, and he's right positioned in the middle. And then Professor Rosenzweig gets a very wonderful shout out in the Hakdama to Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust. So there's a lot of influence here that their parents are bringing in so many different ways. So just on a personal side, how did you see that in your own upbringings?
Yeah, so I'm going to be the first one to answer that question. So just to introduce you to my parents, we're Aleya Mashalom. My mother was Dr. Yaffa Eliach. She was a big Holocaust historian. She did the big Tower of Life in the museum in Washington, and she really pioneered almost all of the commemoration that we do for the Holocaust, whether it's interviews or the idea of spiritual resistance. And she was an individual who really spread this message around the world and changed how we see Jewish commemoration and how we view the Holocaust and those in the Holocaust. My father was Rabbi David Eliach Alav HaShalom. He was the principal of Flatbush for over 50 years and was involved with Flatbush for almost 70 years. And I would really say that my parents really showed us commitment and passion. If I had to describe, you know, the things that really their life and their education, immersion in the house, I would say it's passion and commitment. My parents were very passionate about what they did, and my mother went all over the world researching and speaking and spreading her ideas, and my father really focused more on Flatbush, but for almost 70 years. He was involved with Yeshiva Flatbush, with education, and what does education mean? And many of the day schools around the world, but especially in the United States, really use the curriculum that my father set up and the model that Yeshiva Flatbush set up. So my parents were very committed and very passionate about what they did. And we're two kids in the family, my brother Yotav Eliach and I, and both of us went into education and really community involvement. And I think my parents' passion and commitment and their interest in community and in really advancing all these things had a major impact. So I would say passion and commitment and their interest in education.
First of all, I just want to thank Rabbi Brand for inviting us. And as I've said in the other venues that I was participating in over Shabbos, it's truly special to be here, to be with so many Talmidim and this community which is so supportive of the Kollel. My parents, as Rabbi Brand mentioned, were, my father was a rabbi for over a half century in Toronto and in New York, and he was really a very devoted Talmud of the Rav. I'll get back to that in a second. And took a leading role in the rabbinate in America. He was president of the Rabbinical Council of America, but that's just a reflection of decades and decades of very senior involvement, in everything that took place in Canada and in America. And my mother was a wonderful, devoted Rebbetzin in the communities, but also taught math and English. She didn't teach Torah, but she was the kind of teacher and role model and the special kind of dignity and unique personality that she had, her sincerity and her consistency, that she really influenced her students without, speaking Divrei Torah, just by virtue of who she was. And I would say that the environment of the home that I think was most impactful was the fact that there was an unequivocal priority to Torah, to Yiras Shamayim, as being the values that my parents admired the most, and that they, tried to project for their children as goals and as aspirations. And there was no question in our home, who was the hero. It wasn't, the best hockey player. We grew up in Canada, or any other sport, and it wasn't, the most, excellent writer. My mother loved the literature. It was Talmidei Chachamim. My father, as I mentioned, was a devoted student of Rav Soloveitchik. The Rav had great confidence in my father, and he was part of a small group. Rav had many, many Talmidim, but a smaller group of loyalists who were exceptionally talented in their own right, and had their own interests and strong convictions and, were real personalities, and were part of what I call the unsung, hero generation of rabbis who really transformed, the landscape. Those of us who are here today don't fully appreciate how difficult it was and how inhospitable North American life was to Orthodox Jewry. The epitaphs were written many times. But the Talmidim of the Rav and other great Talmidei Chachamim, you know, who didn't give up and who basically, you know, were true to their principles and produced students, it's a fascinating thing. The students were personalities in their own right and very independent and had a lot of pride, as I say, and accomplishments. But first and foremost, they knew how to be Talmidim, and that's why, in the end of the day, they were exceptional and impactful Rabbanim. And growing up in our house, way before, many years before, decades before, I knew what the Rav even looked like. I knew that there was personality, and you know, I knew his name, and I knew that he was the supreme authority, and that you know, he was my father's hero, and by extension, he was you know, the authority for the family. And my mother came from a very distinguished rabbinic family, you know, and for her, again, the apex of achievement was achievement, you know, in Torah scholarship. And the image of her father and her great-grandfather, who she only met once, but in terms of, you know, the hierarchy of what we aspire to in life, you know, was completely unequivocal. And I think that that had maybe the most powerful impact on us in our formative years, you know, with the, you know, regular issues of growing up in, you know, Canada and in New York. But that was a foundation of stability. And I'll add one other thing, and that is that my father in particular had a gift of Chanoch Lenar Alpidarko, particularly when it came to me. I recall that, you know, I, as an early, at an early stage, wasn't necessarily learning so much, but I was very fascinated by the intricacy and the grandeur of it. You know, and in summers, after I was, you know, once I reached an age where it was possible, my father used to give me projects. He had a little more time in the summer. Ironically, they were halacha l'maisa projects, which is not my, you know, primary focus. But I remember very vividly him giving me research topics, you know, and working with me, you know, from like the age of 11 and 12 and 13. And I think those were some of the most special times that I had, and I think that they really reinforced, you know, the excitement that I had being exposed to his Shabbos Shubat drashas and Shabbos Hagadol drashas and other experiences of high-level learning.
So maybe let's actually build from there. So for many of us, you know, we can aspire to what the Rebbetzin talked about in terms of finding our inner commitment and becoming passionate, and the idea of finding role models, Torah role models. On the other hand, for most of us, we are not equipped in the summertime to make a Shabbos Shuva Drasha project for our 11-year-olds. Like, I don't want to speak for others, but you know, not everyone in this room grew up in this kind of environment. So what about thinking about it from the opposite perspective, when someone comes from a background or a context where they have limited Torah knowledge, so how did they create that kind of commitment and passion and values, and how do they create that chinuch in their own home when they didn't see it from their parents or they don't have the tools themselves?
Well, I think obviously partnerships between home and school and community are very crucial things. Let me just take a step back for a moment. You know, even if you do grow up in an environment, both of us were very fortunate you know, to grow up in environments where, as I said, the chinuch and learning and all of that was the primary focus. But as you say, that's rare. But even in our case, I think both of our parents, you know, had an appreciation for the fact that, you know, you broaden your children's experiences and increase the likelihood of their, you know, interest and development by partnering with schools and with the community. And therefore, even if you have that, you know, framework, you know, the Rav used to say that his only teacher pretty much was his father. You know, he sat in the Beis Medrash, you know, for 18 years without any other Rebbe, but that's a very unusual situation and kind of a pattern and brisk, not necessarily the norm. I'm not sure if it should be the norm. So partnerships are important even when you have, you know, that kind, you're fortunate to have that kind of head start or background, and that's important. It's important to support, you know, the schools and other personalities and the community. I feel I benefited tremendously, you know, from Rebbeim that I had, even at a younger age, and different programs and exposures, great people would come, you know, to town, and my father, you know, would always make sure that we, you know, even if we didn't understand, that we were in the presence of great personalities. But of course, partnerships become even more important when you don't have, you know, a strong foundation at home, and especially when there's sincerity and interest. I think there's a greater responsibility to do the research to find, you know, the maximum impact environment, you know, so that you can build and you can encourage and you can instill passion and commitment and excitement. But, for example, my father himself, who, you know, as you can see from the way I speak, that I, you know, was tremendously influenced by him and a great, obviously, love and affection, but admiration for him. My father was a totally self-made person. My mother is from a rabbinic background. But my father, you know, his parents are very simple people. They could daven, probably. They didn't have any aspirations for a Jewish scholarship. My father used to say it was a bit of a miracle.
Did you know your grandparents?
I knew my grandparents. They were very wonderful, nice people, and very simple people. I knew my grandparents from my father's side. My mother's side, the rabbinic side, I didn't know. My mother's father, you know, died when she was a young woman. But, you know, my father used to say it was a bit of a miracle, a really hashgacha, that he somehow attached himself to, you know, the local chevrashas where he was growing up in Toronto. And he basically forced his way into Yeshiva Toras Chaim, which was headed by, again, a big Talmud Chacham, one of the unappreciated Gedolim of the last generation, you know, Rav Price. My father used to tell terrific stories about how he had to push himself into the school, and, you know, he just refused to leave. He had to push himself into YU. So, you know, my father's a great example.
Kids are pushing their way into school. Sorry, my Shalita is here. You know, we should find those kids. So we'll try. We'll work on it.
Yeah. He didn't have any encouragement, not from home and not from the environment, but there was something that struck a chord and really ignited in him the sense of transcendence. And he pursued it. And my father was a lifelong, devoted Talmud of the yeshiva. He felt that, you know, that framework really made who he was. And, of course, his relationship with the Rav, and earlier Rav Price. So, you know, partnerships are critical, and especially where you don't have that foundation home, they become even more critical. But I think it's important for parents in that position who are interested in their children, you know, growing and developing, you know, not to simply farm it out, you know, to find the right partners. But at the same time, it's what you do at home. You know, children who see that their parents are interested and passionate and are also interested in growing. I think it's a very powerful, a very compelling, you know, message. And if it's, you know, having going to a class with your child, studying something on a more elementary level, the fact that it reflects priorities and the binding and the bonding experience, I think is every bit as crucial in that kind of situation as it is when one is, you know, has the luxury, let's say, of a Beis Medrash at home.
Ironically, in my family as well. So my mother was born in the shtetl when she was very young. Unfortunately, her mother was killed and murdered during the Holocaust, right in the end of the Holocaust. And my mother's mother taught her how to write in hiding. And my grandfather was taken to the gulag after that he survived and was able to have some of the family survive, but went to the Soviet gulag and was there till 1957. So my mother really was alone, and her great uncle brought her to Israel, and then really she said, okay, I did what I promised. I brought you to Israel, and now you're on your own. So they found her a school, a boarding school, and my mother's growth was really from school, and she always appreciated school, and that really was her environment. And my father comes from a Karliner and Litvish family, a mix, and my grandfather, interestingly enough, was a simple individual, and he really collected money for the yeshivas in Yerushalayim and took him for Shalosh Shudas to meet Rav Kook, and that made a very big impression on my father. So in our family as well, my parents felt that bigger figures in their life, my mother, her teachers in the institutions that she was, and my father, who was very influenced by Rav Kook, even though he was very young, that really encouraged him. And later he became actually very involved in Bnei Akiva, even though he comes from a Karlin Hasidic family. But then went to Shivat Hebron. And those two influences, so my father really felt education and outside influences are very important. But he also always felt that his parents were consistent, that they were honest, that they were good people, and they were very involved in the community. And I think every parent has to find their strength and for the children to see what the parents are committed to. So on the one hand, of course, we should get on board and be involved in learning, as Rev Rosenzweig said, and show our students and our kids especially that we are passionate about these things or interested and to learn things. But I think also on the other hand, whatever strengths we have, to realize that that has a huge impact on our kids, on our children. But on the other hand, not to be afraid to realize, oh, there are people out there who really have a lot of the skills and educators who we can partner with in order to, you know, reach the next level.
Many times here in Chicago, we have opportunities. The idea that we can model for our children, even if we don't have the skills ourselves, by us going to that shiur or to that class or bringing our children to say Shalom Aleichem to that person. You know, one of the special memories that I have for our own children, I don't know if I should say in public that I was dressed up in a Flintstones dinosaur purple costume, but I took our children one Purim to Rav Schwartz and Chetzal Pavracha. We were all dressed up, and I felt like just having them have the opportunity to be b'mechitzas or shalom gadol in the presence of a great person. So all of us, we have opportunities that we can model for our children by pursuing our own learning, but also taking them and introducing them and venerating those people. So maybe let's take it now, just thinking about raising your own children, and what are maybe some things that you did intentionally as ways of educating your own children that the average ordinary person could consider, you know, figuring out.
You know, it's hard to be reductionist. I wouldn't want to, like, I wouldn't want to count,
None of the Talmud in this room of Rav Rosenzweig would ever accuse him of being reductionist. I think that we can all agree on that, right?
Thank you. I hope we agree. But what I do think is that chinuch is, for chinuch to be effective, and especially for those who are committed to it, and you know, kehem chayenu v'orach yameinu, this is what we live for. So I think, we always, chanoch l'naro pidarko, for sure, and that's, we always try to tailor, to the strengths and the interests, of our children. What we're interested in accomplishing is what I said at the outset, and what, Professor Rosenzweig said at the outset, and that is projecting an environment where unequivocally it's clear that Devar Hashem, that living a certain kind of life, and, especially through the vehicle of Talmud Torah and Shmiras HaMitzvos, that is what defines us. And that's, what we strive for, and that's what we admire, in others. Alongside, to be very clear about it, this is, Yeshiva University, Kolel, we're proud of the ideology of engaging the world and having, broader, interests. I mentioned before that I grew up, in an environment, where Torah and Yiras Shamayim was certainly the priority. My parents were both very interested, in very cultural people, very interesting people. My father, I didn't mention before, but I assumed everybody knew, was a professor of Jewish history in Yeshiva College, for decades and decades. And what?
My teacher when I was in my...
You had, everybody had him. And, he had their own special way. Part of his charm was, and his effectiveness, was everybody understood that he came from the Beis Medrash, and he was proud of that. And my father was very proud. He used to say all the time that, he didn't think it was a coincidence that the children of the Rosh Yeshiva would send their sons to his Jewish history class, because they understood that he, was an extension of the Beis Medrash. So my parents were very interested in many other things. My mother loved music, and she played the piano, and she was a voracious reader, and she loved math. And nonetheless, I think, you know, Dafka, because of that, the priority on Torah and Yira was such a powerful message. And we have tried in our way, our humble way, I guess, you know, to be consistent to our passions and our beliefs and our priorities, and to convey that to our student, to our children, you know, each in their own way, and to make their lives an extension, you know, of our lives. When we would be invited to scholars in residence, we typically take them along. I was going to say drag them along, but you'd have to ask them whether it was, you know, most of the experiences are very good. We'd go to the yeshiva, you know, they'd come along, you know, with us. You know, some of my, you know, earlier Talmidim who are here this evening, and it's really a pleasure to see, you know, reminded me, they remember when some of the children used to come along with me. When they didn't have school, they used to come to the shir. You know, they'd draw on the board, they'd say a little Dvar Torah. Now we do it with the grandchildren, at least on Zoom. So I think the main thing is to, you know, have your children and your grandchildren feel comfortable and feel in a natural way that this is an extension, you know, of their own lives. And to find things to learn with them, to daven with them, to, you know, reflect, you know, that this is how we identify, you know, and of course we want them to be exposed to other things, and we want them to find their own path in Torah and in other interests, but that this, you know, foundational core, you know, is kind of something that they imbibe. And that's why I'm always a little hesitant, like, you know, what specifically do you do? You know, once you're doing specific things, I think it takes away from the holistic approach, you know, which we very much try to do. But as mechanchim, I will say, you know, we face a bit of a different challenge. On the one end, we have the benefit, you know, this is what we do, we love it, we believe in it, and we can expose our children to it. But children of mechanchim all know, you know, and there are two types, you know, the ones with the good experiences and the one with the not so good experiences. It's a challenge for parents who are mechanchim, you know, to draw, you know, a proper balance, you know, between being public personalities and being devoted to the community and to your students and to your position, you know, et cetera, which are all very demanding. And at the same time, you know, being authentic, you know, parents to your children, I guess in modern parlance, you might say, not throwing them under the bus or sacrificing them, you know, for the community, that they should know that they come first. And that the things that you preach and speak about, you know, especially including things about the priority of family, that you actually practice. And I think that's very challenging because there are a lot of pressures. And it's something that we particularly have, you know, worked very hard, you know, to try to accomplish. You know, you'd have to ask the children if we've accomplished it, you know. But certainly that we make a very conscious, focused effort, you know, to... you know, to be consistent in that respect, to share the passion and the commitment, to include them, and at the same time to give them, you know, the kind of childhood, you know, that they deserve in a holistic and a consistent ways. And I have to say that my parents, I think, were very good role models in that respect. My father was a very devoted Rav, and my mother was a devoted Rebbetzin, and we never felt, you know, that they were projecting themselves as people who they weren't. And we never felt that somehow, you know, the priority of family, you know, was sacrificed. I don't mean this decision or that decision, not being at this or at that event. I mean, of course, you know, there are always, you know, difficult choices to make. But in the bigger picture, I think that's a crucial, focus in the family life of Mechanchim.
I am going to stick to the three things or several things and be a little more concrete. We were always very consistent in the message in the family, meaning what is important and, you know, Torah and other values that are important to us. And we would have many, many conversations with our children, meaning we were very open to the idea of the conversation and talking with them. And if they had questions, that they would feel comfortable to really speak with us. And of course, kids go through different experiences, but overall, we were very open to hearing from them and to really try to answer a lot of their questions. We learned with them. We really took a lot of time out of our schedule to really learn with them, not only to talk about the big ideas, but also to really spend time on actual texts or different ideas. We took a lot of trips with our children, and we did a lot of downtime with our children, a lot of sports. I mean, we really tried to spend a lot of time with them just doing the things that they really enjoyed. And another thing we did was whatever books they were reading, we would read them as well, so we could discuss it with them, see what's, you know, really, you know, top of their priorities. Hopefully children and books are still big today.
I'm hoping our kids are reading books. As you're by Samber, we have to find out exactly how many of our kids. I'm not going to ask the students. But can we interrupt just for a second?
Yes.
When we get to the third. But what about, I'm curious, thoughts on incentives. Incentives at home for kids for different things.
First.
Yeah, I'm going to ask the Redison first on that one, please.
Very specific incentives, we decided very early that we're not going to have specific incentives. Like, oh, if you finish this, you get this prize. If you finish this, or we weren't like charts. We weren't big mitzvah note parents, and the kids always said, come on, everyone else is sending those, you know, mitzvah notes to, you know, put it, you know, hang it up on the chart and the board. But so specific incentives, it's interesting. As a family, we did not do specific incentives, and we discussed it you know, a lot, because life is difficult and you do good things and you don't always get paid back for it. And we didn't want the kids to think, the children, whatever word you like to use best, to think that, okay, every time you do something, or, you know, you're always going to get that prize. So as a very specific quid pro quo, we really didn't do those kind of incentives. But when the schools had incentives and you had the charts to fill for the school, or when there were incentives for the school, we always went along with those. And we see some of our children using, you know, incentive charts with our grandchildren.
We padded the charts just like all the other parents.
Principals, you didn't, Lindsay or Sam, you didn't hear that. We
but
only fill out the exact things that they did. We never, if someone's not listening to this either.
If we were going to do it already, we passed.
but that was an interesting decision that we made. And now our youngest is already married. And I do feel that for us, you know, every family is different, but for us that really worked, because they realized you do things because it's the right thing to do. And sometimes it's not easy because you have those years where, you know, that could work very well. But in the bigger picture, we didn't do specific incentives, but Rav Rosenzweig is going to explain the other side.
No, I'd just say that, listen, I think parents are legitimately have different perspectives on this issue. But I do think that there's a distinction to be made, and this is what Professor Rosenzweig was indicating. I think you don't want your children to be doing Torah mitzvos in a kind of transactional, you know, kind of a way, or the phrase that she used, a quid pro quo. If I may just take an aside for a second, in my opinion, this is really the foundation of the famous position of the Rambam. Rambam is, a very well-known position against rabbis, you know, and educators being paid. You know, how he understands in Mishnah and Masechet Avos, you know, of a kardam lach borbo. But my understanding of the Rambam is, you know, that he had this terrible, you know, fear that, you know, less, you know, people who get, you know, whether people themselves perceive or it becomes confused or misconstrued even in the minds of the mechanech or the rav, who is the recipient, you know, that might take away from the, you know, lishma, if you will, from the purity of motive and the sense of you're doing, you know, the Rabbona Shel Olam's, you know, will. This is what we live for. So the second that becomes, you know, transactional, it can compromise it. Now, the world didn't paskin like the Rambam, and, you know, most of us in Chinuch do accept the checks, you know, when they're mailed to us, and you're fundraising for the Kollel, so I assume that you're not following the position of the Rambam as well. But I think that there's a, you know, like in many things that we don't follow, but are the positions of great men, you know, the principle that underlies it is something that we should be sensitive to. And that was really our thinking, and not, you know, providing more material incentives, because we were concerned less, you know, it becomes a transaction or it becomes a quid pro quo. But as was indicated early, you know, we were very liberal, you know, in building our children's library. Like going to Sfarim, you know, store was always a very exciting prospect. And, you know, building the library. We all came, both of us, from, you know, that kind of background. The love of books and Sfarim and what they reflect. And our children love, you know, they again, imbibe that very young. So, I mean, of course, while there wasn't the transactional or quid pro, wasn't, you know, you do this, I'll give you that. And certainly it wasn't, you know, money or a basketball game. Even though, again, I understand if it's incentives at work and sometimes they can, you know, mitos shelo lishma, ba lishma. That's a very legitimate. But for our own family, we were a little bit uncomfortable. There were here and there even offers from other family members. Very well motivated and sincere, you know, to try to encourage certain projects, our children, you know, for
my
you know,
father,
financial gain.
Let's be honest, it was my father wanted to, you know, offer some of the kids,
grandchildren,
you know some monetary things, and we nixed it. We said,
yeah, we'll find out, like a Sfarim, or, you know, he'll go on a trip with you. We felt that, again, it was too much of a kind of, but I want to make it clear, because a lot of people do it, and I think they do it very sincerely, and I think it's a decision, you know, just like Chanoch Lenar al Pidarko. Parents also have a right, you know, but I think the sensibility that we are reflecting is something that people need to think about seriously. And even when there are, you know, more tangible, concrete, you know, and material incentives, I think it's important, you know, that they be given, you know, in the spirit, you know, that kind of, you know, still projects the sincerity and the aspirational part. But sometimes, you know, there needs to be a process.
Like if a school said, oh, if you do this and you go basketball game, from the schools or from whatever organizations they were part of, we said, you know, of course. But just as a family, we didn't do it. And sometimes it was tough, you know. But also it becomes difficult because there's Leah and I, we had seven children, So, you know, when are you going to do it? And if you give to one, you did the other. And then, you know, and then the bigger picture gets lost. But there are difficult moments when you have to keep that consistency, you know, for all those years.
Again, while there were no incentives in that way, but we found ways to not only encourage, but also to mark people's accomplishments. And no one, you know, suffered from the absence of incentives in terms of, you know, the longer run, I think.
Okay, so I won't talk about the incentives that happened in our house. And as the time is winding down, maybe one last reflection on sometimes what is a difficult topic of parents whose children did not choose a path of Torah and mitzvot, and how do parents approach and connect with and relate to children who made different choices than the values that they tried to bring in to their own home?
Well, I think firstly, it's important, you know, to never give up hope. You know, I spoke at Shalashudis, you know, in the shul that I was in about, you know, the effect of Mara, Sham Sam Lo, Chokum Mishpat to Sham Nisahu, Klal Yisrael, you know, the greatest, you know, therapy, you know, the most effective, you know, mechanism for inspiring people, for you know, engendering their interest, and the end of the day is still to expose them to great people and to great ideas. And we very much believe, you know, in the koach of Torah to be machsir, you know, lachsanya. And, you know, it's not a magic solution, like you sit somebody down in front of a gemara or a chumash, you force him to go to a shir, or even he wants to go to a shir, and then all of it's a serious business, and, you know, it's a lot, it requires a lot of, you know, immersion. But at the end of the day, one should never give up hope. Obviously, well, we strive for our children to immerse themselves and to commit themselves to Torah and mitzvot. We believe this is Kiyem Chayinu Ve'Orech Chameinu. This is the basis of a purpose of life. But I've seen, you know, people at various stages of their life with a more open mind, perhaps, maybe, you know, removed from other baggage in some cases. Be exposed to Torah and or to great personalities, you know, and for it to be tremendously impactful. Talmud Torah is the basis of tshuva. Talmud Torah is the way of neutralizing the Yetzer Hara. Again, it's not a magic formula, but it's when you're exposed to you know, something which is transcendent, and the values that are sophisticated, they're consistent, and they're inspiring, and you have an open mind, you know, there is always the opportunity for people to grow. And the Tshuva movement, the Baal Tshuva movement, you know, reflects that. And I would never, you know, bet against the Koach HaTorah, the Achdut HaMaskil VaHamuskal. You know, the Ramban in his commentary to the Torah suggests that the Torah is Shemos Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the pasuk that we use as the source for Birchas HaTorah, Ki Shem Hashem Ekra Havu Godel Elokeinu. So what does it mean that the Torah is the, you know, the name of God? It means that philosophically it's almost impossible, you know, for man to really engage the Almighty. You know, we're, you know, very finite, puny beings, physical beings, and the Ribbono Shel Olam is omnipotent and omniscient, and in theory should be completely inaccessible. But that's what we believe. We believe that the Torah is the gift and mitzvos, and Matan Torah and Maimon Har Sinai, which we'll read about next week, that's the bridge between one and the other. And that if people have an open mind and they're exposed and we're patient with them, there's always a possibility, you know, that they will grow, sometimes slowly, sometimes incompletely. But it's important that we not give up. And it's important that we, you know, keep striving to expose them to what we believe is a purposive way of life. In the end of the day, you know, that's what we dream for our children. And if sadly we don't see immediate results, if we don't see the results that we're happy with, we're still obligated, you know, to expend every effort. And there's much reason for hope and for optimism.
And my message would be, love your children. I think love, having a home of love and care. We grew up in homes that was a main message. We tried to make that as, you know, the environment where we're raising our children, that no matter what, that you are, you know, really loved and you love your children. And I think if the relationship is one of love and care and you really can rely on the parents and realize that they're there for you, so even though maybe they're going in a different path, that is you know, always a connection and is always, you know, our job and, you know, our role as parents.
And so maybe one way to conclude and to thank everyone, including Rav Rosenzweig and the Rebbetzin, is to recognize that every single person in this room and every person who has contributed and has been involved in the Kolel for the past L'Yayin Hara 15 years has made a contribution to the chinuch of our community, of your own children, of your own grandchildren, because we are blessed, and I am delighted to acknowledge Shul Rabbanim who are here, by Reese from the CRC. We are blessed to have amazing shuls, and we must be committed to our shuls. And we are blessed to have extraordinary schools, and we have Rabbi Linzer and Rabbi Samber, and we must show up for our schools. But the fact that someone makes a choice to participate in the Kolel, that's not a must. That's a choice. That's an expression of passion and commitment and interest. And that is an incredibly powerful demonstration of chinuch, of that value. And the fact that as a community we have decided to create this Kolel, to sustain it and nurture it for 15 years, that's a credit to every one of you. And that is what matters, that each of you have chosen to create this Kolel. And so I hope that all of you walk away not just inspired by the fact that we're in the presence b'mechitzasam of great people who are descendants of great people and who are passing on their tradition and their insights to us, but to realize that each one of us, each one of you, you have already made your mark. You matter. You are a great person in your own circle of influence by choosing to raise your life, your children, your neighbors, your grandchildren, your community, through the expression of Torah. So I invite you to turn your attention to the screen to conclude tonight's program for some nachas for what you have created over the past 15 years. Thank you. The past 15 years have unquestionably been beyond anyone's expectations. Many of the members of the Kolel would find Chicago to be the place
where they would establish their family.